Okay, good morning, everyone. Let's begin. Our share this morning is dedicated by Leah Natan Berry in memory of Leah's father, Eliezer Avram Tzvi, Ben Psach Yaleh. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the Neshama should have an Aliyah and the family a Nechama. And with that, let's begin. So this morning we find ourselves still in the second chapter of Perek Shira, focusing this morning on the Shemesh, the sun. So remember again, interestingly enough, in Perek Shira, so we make a distinction between day and night, and we'll see sun and moon. And that's because Perek Shira is very much arranged in accordance with the framework of Maaseh Bereishis, of the Genesis narrative, of the creation story. And know that in the creation story, first there's a creation of day and night, and then there's a creation of the luminaries, the sun, the moon, and the stars afterwards. So Perek Shira follows that same exact model. Beginning first again, we saw in the last couple of weeks, day and night, and now this week we're going to see sun, and Emir Tzashem, next week we're going to see moon, but I think next week Emir Tzashem we're probably going to see Lag BaOmer. Emir Tzashem, we're going to focus on that a little bit during this slot, but we'll see what happens next week. So let's begin. Number one, Shemesh Omer, the sun says, Shemesh Yareach Amad, Zvula L'Or Chitzacha Yalechu, L'Noga Barak Chanisecha. Literally translated, Shemesh Yareach Amad Zvula, sun and the moon stood in their dwellings, L'Or Chitzacha Yalechu, to the light of your arrows they go, L'Noga Barak Chanisecha, to the brightness of the lightning of your spear. So first of all, what's unique to point out is that this is one of the first times throughout our journey in Perek Shira that the Perek Shira is not quoting a pasuk from Tehillim, but in this case is quoting a pasuk from Habakkuk. And if you take a look at number two, it's the same pasuk. This is from Habakkuk, Perek Gimel, Pasuk Yud Aleph, chapter 3, verse 11. Again, it's the same pasuk. Shemesh Yareach Amad Zvula, the sun and moon stood in their dwellings. L'Or Chitzecha Yalechu, to the light of your arrows they go. L'Noga Barak Chanisecha, to the brightness of the lightning of your spear. So let's analyze this a little bit. So obviously, as we know through Perek Shira, the sun is trying to teach us something. The sun is trying to convey to us a lesson. So actually, over the course of our learning today, we're going to focus on three different lessons to be learned from the sun. One of them we're going to extrapolate from this pasuk in Habakkuk, and two we'll take from other sources. So let's focus on this pasuk. We look at this pasuk in Habakkuk, and of course the first question we have is, what is Habakkuk? That's a good, Habakkuk is not a what, it's a who. Habakkuk is one of the Nevi'im of Trei Asar. One of the Nevi'im, one of the prophets. It's okay. I went to yeshiva. I didn't know who Habakkuk was either until I got to give this shir. So, good. So Habakkuk, so again, the truth is we can speak a lot about Habakkuk in general. But we'll focus just on this pasuk. So what's the context of this particular pasuk? So if you take a look at number three, so the Metsudas David comments, he says, Shemesh Yareach Amad Zvula, the sun and the moon stood in their dwellings, right? The Metsudas David in number three, Bimei Yoshua Amad. This is a reference to the episode where the sun stood still in Sefer Yehoshua. So, Bimei Yoshua Amad Kol Echad Mehem Bemedura, both the sun and the moon stood still. We're going to focus on this in just a moment. V'lohocha mahalocha, and neither the sun nor the moon went through their normal trajectory. Kimo shakasa vayidom Hashemesh vayareach amad. So says Habakkuk, this particular pasuk, this statement, or says the Metsudas David, Shemesh yareach amad zvula, the sun and the moon stood in their dwellings, is a reference to an episode which occurred in Sefer Yehoshua. Which episode is this referring to? Take a look at number four. So the Navi in Yehoshua tells us as follows. Perek Yud, chapter 10, number 4. Vayavo aleim Yoshua pitom kol alayla ala min ha-Gilgal. Yoshua goes ahead and crosses in. Remember again, this is towards the beginning of Sefer Yoshua. Yoshua crosses in over the Yarden, over the Jordan River. And you could actually, it's amazing, you could go to the spot where Yoshua crossed over the Yarden. Today it's called Ras al Yahud, so it's also known today, it's much more popular as a non-Jewish site, it's much more popular for Christian pilgrims, as it's known as the baptismal site. the spot where Yashka baptized his apostles. So it's actually amazing. If you go there today, you'll go and you'll see all of these Christian pilgrims come in their white robes. They do the tevila and the mikvah, right? They go out and they go down into the Jordan River. So it's actually only become repopularized with Jewish tourists lately. But mamish, historically, we pretty much know that that's the site where Yoshua led the Jews across the Yarden. It's amazing because when you go there, remember we know that the Jewish people experienced two splitting of the seas. One was by the Yamsuf, the second was by the Jordan River. So sometimes you go to the Jordan River and you think about the miracle of the splitting of the river and you say to yourself, no big deal, right? Look at the Jordan River. It's not exactly a Yamsuf. So it's amazing. If you go to Ras Al Yehudin, it's quite amazing. Remember, the Jordan River, one side is Israel, the other side is Jordan. You can look across the Jordan River and you see Jordanian soldiers right literally across the Jordan River. So if you've ever been there, so they have markers where the Jordan River used to be. So when you look at where the Jordan River used to be, it used to be a massive body of water. And you imagine Yoshua and the Jewish people coming to the banks of the Yarden and the Yarden splitting, something absolutely amazing. But to be able to stand at the site where Yoshua led Klal Yisrael through the Yarden, through the Jordan River, is quite amazing. So in any event, they come through the Jordan, and one of the first battles they have to wage is in a place called Gilgal. So what happens? Vayavo aleim Yoshua pitom kalalayla ala mila Gilgal. Vayumeim Hashem lifnei Yisrael. Vayakim mako gidola begivon. Vayir defein derech ma'ala beis choron. Vayakim ad azeka va'ad makeda. I'm just going to read a little bit more. Vayi benusam. So what happens? They come to Gilgal, and one of the first battles they have to wage is in a place by the name of Givon. HaKadosh Baruch, there's much more to this story, but for our purposes today, God causes incredible confusion amongst the residents of Givon. They flee. In addition to that, there's huge hail that comes down and decimates the population. As Yidaber Yoshua Lashem Biyom Teis Hashem Esamori Lifnei Bnei Yisrael, Vayomer Lenei Yisrael Shemesh BaGivon Dom VeYareach BeEmek Ayalon. Yoshua calls out to HaKadosh Baruch and says, God, we are about to conquer Givon. We're about to conquer Givon. Don't let the sun set, because the moment the sun sets, what happens? Gets dark, well said, right? And what happens once it gets dark, right? The battle is over. The battle is over. Understand, if the battle is over for today, that gives an opportunity for the Givonites to regroup. If they regroup, then you have to start the war effort all over again tomorrow. Yoshua calls out to HaKadosh Baruch, we have the upper hand. The Givonites are confused. They're fleeing. Allow the sun to remain in the sky. Give us some more hours of daylight to be able to finish the job. Number 4, Pasuk Yud Gimel, verse 13. Vayidom Hashemesh v'yareach amad ad yikum goy ayvav halohik suval sefer yoshev ayamo d'Hashemesh b'chatzi Hashemayim v'lo atz lavo kiyom tamim. So what happens? Yoshua literally gets another number of hours of daylight. Vayidom Hashemesh. The sun remained in place. The sun did not set. It remained in place, giving them the necessary daylight hours in which to finish the military campaign against Givon. And never before did it ever happen. And never again will it ever occur that God listened to a mere mortal, to a human being, to ultimately change the laws of nature. Yoshua asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu to perform a supernatural miracle to cause the sun to remain in the sky, do not set, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu listened. This is the miracle of the sun remaining in the horizon in the city of Givon. Says the Metsudas David, this pasuk in Habakkuk, or this statement by the prophet Habakkuk, of Shemesh Yareach Amad Zavula, that the sun and the moon remained in their dwellings, is a reference to this miracle in Sefer Yoshua. It's a reference to this miracle in the book of Joshua, where the sun remained in the sky. Now obviously, why is the moon being mentioned over here? Because if the sun remains fixed in its place, it also prevents the moon from appearing, so to speak. So therefore, again, if the sun remains fixed in its place, the moon remains fixed in its place as well. Says Matudas David, that's the reference. Incredible. Incredible story. Now, what's so dramatic about this miracle? You see, we are a little miracle. We have a little bit of miracle desensitization. What do I mean by that? We are a people of miracles. We are a nation of miracles. The Chumash is filled with miracles. The Navi is filled with miracles. Even our post-prophetic books, like Megillas Esther, are filled with different kinds of miracles. And the truth is, those of us who see the world through the right kind of lenses realize that there are miracles around us each and every day. What's so profound, as we say in Modim, right? What do we say in Modim? We thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Va'an Nisecha, Shebachol Yom Imanu. Thank you, Hashem, for the miracles you do for us and you do with us each and every day. So what's so dramatic about this miracle in Givon? What's so amazing? Remember again, Habakkuk is a number of generations later, a number of centuries later than Yahushua. So ultimately, again, why is it that Habakkuk is making specific mention of the miracle of the sun standing still and Givon? And by extension, why is it in Perek Shira? What is the message that the sun is trying to convey to us? So I'll show you something very interesting. If you go back to Bereshis, number 5. So the pasuk says, "Vayomer Elokim yihi maoros berekia shamayim lahavdil bein hayom ubein halayla." So God says, "Let there be luminaries in the heavens, in the sky, to distinguish between the day and the night." Vahayu lamaoros berekia shamayim la'ira al aretz vaykein. So God created the luminaries. Pasuk tes zayin. Number 5, Pasuk Tes Zayin. Vayas Elokim eshnei ha-me'oros ha-gdolim, es ha-me'or ha-gadol ha-mshalas bayom, ve-es ha-me'or ha-katon ha-mshalas ba-leveis ha-kochavim. So God makes the two luminaries. The large luminary to go ahead and shine by day, that's the sun. The smaller luminary to go ahead and shine by night, that is the moon, as well as the stars. Vayitein osam Elokim b'rekei ha-shamayim la'ir ha-la'aretz, v'lemshol bayom u-ba-layla, ולהבדיל בין האור ובין החושך. וירא אלוקים כי טוב, וירא אלוקים יום רביעי. So if you notice, by the way, the theme of the entire creation story is framework, dividing lines. There is an order, there is a seder. Everything in creation has its place, and everything is commanded not to overrun its place. So for example, there's water and there's land. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes ahead and commands the waters, you stay here, and land, you stay here. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates night and day, he creates darkness and light, he creates Yom Laila, sun and moon. He tells the sun, you are to be the dominant feature of the daytime hours, and moon, you are to be the dominant fixture of the nighttime hours. Moon, I don't want to see you by day. Sun, I don't want to see you by night, so to speak. Everything is given a place, everything is given an order. Interestingly enough, and that's the Seder, that's the order that defines our natural world. Remember again, that natural order that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put into place close to 6,000 years ago is the same order that we live by to this day. There are moments of aberration. If you take a look at number 6, so remember again, this is after the Mabul, after the flood story. So what happens? Noach comes out of the Teva, offers up a carbon, offers up a sacrifice. HaKadosh Baruch Hu smells the pleasing aroma of the sacrifice. And what happens? Vayomer Hashem Alibo, God says, Lo osif o the kalas adama ba'avora adam. I'm not going to go ahead and curse the earth because of man anymore. Ki yetzer leif ha'adam raminu arav. Velo osif od lahakos kochai. Fine. Skip to the next pasuk. Od kol yimei ha'aretz zera v'katzir kor v'chom kaitz v'chorif yom v'layla lo yishbosu. And God furthermore says something else. I will no longer go ahead and mix up the seasons, nor will I go ahead and mix up day and night. Rashi in number 7 says as follows, Yom v'layla lo yishbosu, michlal sheshavsu kol yimei hamabul, shelo shimshu hamazalos, velo niker bein bayom ubein balayla. See, amazingly enough, what happened during the flood? You see, when we think about the flood, we often think about just massive amounts of water obscuring all dry land. Something else happened. Everything was mixed up. There was no day, there was no night. Everything kind of worked together. So for the days of the Mabul, the seasons kind of all merged into each other. Day and night merged into each other. And therefore, in the post-flood promise, God promises that not only will I not go ahead and bring another flood, but what? I will keep the seasons separate from each other. And Yom Valayla Lo Yishbosu. The order, the framework of day and night will not cease, which means day will not bleed into night, night will not bleed into day. They will be separate, independent entities. That is the order. So I just want to point out something interesting. So this was the order when God created the world. God chose to break that order when? When? By the Mabul, by the flood. And after the flood, He chooses to go ahead and restore that order. Until when? Until Yehoshua. Right? Until Yehoshua comes along. And until Yehoshua comes along, HaKadosh Baruch Hu once again needs to say, He disrupts the order. Now this is a little bit of a different disruption. During the days of the Mabul, the order was disrupted because night and day operated simultaneously. So in Givon, HaKadosh Baruch Hu once again disrupts the order. It's a different kind of disruption. This disruption was an elongation of the day at the expense of the night. But nevertheless, the fundamental order is disrupted. Comes along the Navi Habakkuk, and the Navi Habakkuk chooses to speak about this disruption of order. Shemesh Yareach Amad Zavula. He chooses to point out the fact that God disrupted the natural order of creation. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you said to Noach after the flood, Yom Valayla Lo Yishbosu. You said again, you seem to make a divine declarative, a divine promise, that never again will the order of night and day be mixed up. But yet, you did. When you had to, you changed the order of things and you allowed the sun to remain in the sky. You kept the moon at bay for however many hours in order to give Yehoshua extra daylight to be able to finish the task of conquering Givon. What's the lesson? The lesson is that sometimes in life, you must learn the art of change. You see, most of us operate within a particular framework and within particular confines. We have personality traits, we have attributes, we have characteristics. And at the end of the day, most of us go through life pretty much saying, although sometimes we don't articulate it, but we definitely feel it, like, this is what it is, right? This is who I am. This is who I am. It's love it or leave it. You know, I could tweak a little bit of this, I could tweak a little bit of that, but pretty much I am change averse. This is not, most of us don't say it, because when you say it, it sounds so crazy, right? When you say it, it sounds so arrogant. But most of us operate with this mindset. This is who I am. This is the personality I have created. This is the persona I have forged. I'm open to a little bit of tweaking here and there, but this is ultimately who I am. This is, for better or for worse, sickness or through health, right, till death do us part, this is who and what I am. And what Habakkuk is coming along and telling us is something amazing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said the same thing. God said the same thing. There's day and there's night. And day will never bleed into night. And night will never bleed into day. Except when what? When it has to change. Except when it has to change. So it had to change ultimately in the days of Noah. And it had to change again in the days of Yehoshua. That sometimes in life you have to learn that you can't be rigid all of the time. That you have to learn that there are times when you have to adapt. There are times that you have to change. And this becomes one of the greatest life challenges because there are some things you can't change. You know, we live in a society where it seems to be everything is open for change, right? Everything is open for change. There are no rigid definitions anymore, right? There's no rigid definition of gender, right? You could decide what gender you want to be. There's no rigid definition of life. When does life begin? When does life end? We live in a society now where we want to abolish all definitions of everything. Which makes sense, because if you abolish all definitions of everything, then ish kala yasha be'inav yasa, that leads to moral relativity. Everything is okay. Everything is fine. Everything is acceptable. And we, as a spiritual, as a people of the Torah, must be fundamentally resistant to that. There are definitions. There has to be a certain level of moral rigidity that exists. Not everything is okay. Not everything is permissible. Not everything can be condoned. We're things that we have to be rigid on. I believe in one God. That's not really open for discussion. There are 613 mitzvos. I'm not saying I observe all of them, but I accept the fact that all of them are from HaKadosh Baruch Hu and they're not subject to change. There are certain areas in life where you absolutely must be immovable and rigid. But there are many, 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 did I mention many, other areas where you must be open to change, where I must be open to adapting, where I have to be strong enough to say to myself, just because I've done it this way for so many years does not mean A, that it was ever correct. That's number one. And sometimes in life, things were correct in the past, but they weren't correct, or they're not correct now. The simple answer to that, the simple example of that is, if you try to raise your children the way you were raised, you will fail. You will fail. You know, there's a famous Maisa. His name escapes me right now, but there's a famous Breslov Mashpia in Eretz Yisrael. I can't remember. It'll come to the tip of my tongue. So someone came to this Mashpia, to this Breslov Rav in Eretz Yisrael, telling him about a particular mechanech, a particular Rebbe in the Cheder that was hitting the kids. He's disciplining the kids with physical punishment. And they called in the Rebbe. They called in the Rebbe. He said, you can't do that. We don't do that anymore. So the Mechanech said, well, listen, I am a fourth generation Rebbe. And this is how my father did it. This is how my grandfather did it. This is how my great-grandfather did it. And they were all privileged to go ahead and establish multiple generations of wonderful God-fearing Jews. And if it worked for them, it's going to work for me as well. So the Mashpia said to him, okay. So the Rebbe goes home a little bit later on that evening, and he finds that there are workers in his home, and they're pulling out the refrigerator, the microwave. And he said, what's happened? And the worker said, well, we got word. I'm sorry, I can't remember his name. We got word from this Breslov Rav that you were to remove the appliances of your home. So the Rebbe runs to the Rav. He says, what's going on over here? So the Rav says to him, listen, I see, Mamish, you're an old school kind of guy. So what worked for your father, your grandfather, and your great-grandfather should work for you. Your father didn't have a microwave. Your grandfather didn't have a refrigerator. Your great-grandfather didn't have a washing machine. So, Mamish, if it worked for them, it should work for you as well. We have to adapt. We have to adapt. And by the way, it's not just generational adaptation. It's even in life. You know, we as people, we change as life goes on. You know, we change, but because you live in your own skin, so sometimes you don't see the changes that you have undergone. But we change. And sometimes we don't realize that even in our life relationships, what worked in my marriage 10 years ago may not work now. What worked with my kids when they were 5 may not work when they're 35. Right? And we don't realize that because I'm living in my own skin, I'm living in my own self, I don't realize that I have to change. And we, human beings, by definition, are change averse for one simple reason. It's not a chisaron in us. It's because we're made up of matter. And matter's natural state is to be at rest until it is acted upon. I don't want to change. I don't want to do things differently. I don't want to adapt. If it worked for me 30 years ago, then it's got to be a way that it works for me now. And that is absolutely true in certain areas, In personal and interpersonal things, it does not work. It does not work. We have to learn the art of adaptation, the art of change. Even HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who said that certain things will not change, he says it when he creates the world, certain things will not change. Night won't change. Day won't change. Until it does, right? Until it did a couple of generations later by the Mabul. Until it does a couple of generations after that by Yahushua. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is modeling for us something so profoundly significant, which is, although change is often the scariest thing we encounter, it is an absolute necessity for successful living. Yes, be rigid in certain things, but be careful what you're rigid about. Right? And make sure very clearly that you're really being rigid for the right reasons. But be rigid with certain things. But 85% of the things in our personalities and in our families and in our interpersonal relationships, we must live them with our eyes open and recognize, am I really doing this the right way? Am I talking the right way? Am I conducting myself in the right way? Am I handling these circumstances? I can't tell you how many times people encounter challenges and they don't realize that they are the problem. They are the problem. It's not the circumstances that are the problem, because the circumstances are what they are. It's how you're handling the problem that is amplifying the problem. It's how you're talking to the other people that is pouring fuel on the fire. It is your outlook on the issue that is amplifying the problem. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu could kiviyachol adapt and change, then we must learn how to adapt and change as well. I'll show you an incredible illustration of this. If you take a look at number 8, so the Pasuk in Bereishis says, this is going back to the episode of Lot. So remember again, quick review, Lot and his family relocate to Sdom. God decides to destroy the city of Sdom, but in the merit of Avraham Avinu is going to go ahead and save Lot, his wife, and his children. So the Malachim, the angels, come to Sdom to destroy Sdom. They tell Lot, quick, get everyone and everything together because we are getting out of here. And he gives them instructions. Number 8. So the Malach, after he takes Lot and his family outside, run. Run. Do not look back. And do not go ahead and stand in the plain. Run to the mountains. Penti safa, lest you perish together with stone. And we know what happens. Number 9. So Lot's wife, the Medrash names her as Iris. Lot's wife looks back. She looks back and she becomes a pillar of salt. A very enigmatic story, right? We're never introduced to this woman beforehand. She looks back and she becomes a pillar of salt. So what's the pshat? So remember, the commentaries focus on two questions here. Number one, why is she looking back? Number two, why salt? So the Medrash writes in number 10, Vatabit ishto me'achorov, acher shomer lahamalach al tabit acharecha, haysa nafsha homa al b'nosan l'sharos pistom. So the Medrash writes, tragic idea. Remember again, Lot and his wife go, two unmarried daughters come with them, two married daughters remain behind. Why does the wife of Lot look back? She's a mother. She's a last minute hope that maybe her married daughters decided to follow them after all. She's looking back longingly for her children. Rashi understands a little bit different. Vatinitziv melach. Why did she become salt? So Rashi quotes the Medrash that we are familiar with. So b'melech chata u'b'melech laksa. She sinned with salt, and therefore she's punished with salt. How did she sin with salt? Amar la tnima at melech la'orchim halalu. When Lot had brought home the guests, he said to his wife, can you give them a little bit of salt? Amar la afa minag hara hazeh ba'la hanig b'makam hazeh. It's bad enough you brought home guests. Now you want to give them salt as well. And therefore, again, she looks back. She was stingy with the salt. And therefore, because of that, she's punished by turning into a pillar of salt. But it seems to be a disjointed story. I mean, what's happening over here? First of all, again, it's not like, you'll excuse me, Lot's wife doesn't play an integral part in this story. The only reason, by the way, that she's even mentioned, why in this storyline is she even mentioned? Because remember, this story comes right before which story? the episode of the act of incest between Lot and his daughters. So the Torah is kind of giving a piece of information as how did that even occur? And the simple answer is his wife wasn't there. His wife wasn't there. Everything had fallen apart. But she's not a pivotal character in the story. You could tell me that she's just not there. You could tell me that she died. But yet you go out of your way and you tell me, all this information. She looked back. She turned into a pillar of salt. Torah is not a storybook. And yet you're giving me all of this information about a woman who appears to be an inconsequential figure in the narrative. If all of this information is being given to us, it means that we are to learn a lesson. Look at the Targum Yonah, Sunday number 12. This is amazing. Vistaklos insisei mibasar malacha liminoda mahavi besof beise. Do you know why she looked back? Writes the Targum Yonah, son. Do you know why she looked back? Because she could not disassociate from stone. She could not leave that life behind. She said, I'm a sodomite. This is who I am. I'm from the city of Sodom. I can't change my identity. I can't become someone different. She's leaving because probably her husband grabbed her by the arm and is pulling her out of Sodom. But she looks back because at the end of the day, I'm much more one of them than I am one of you. Malachim, I don't know who you guys are. I married a nephew of Avram, but I have nothing to do with that mishpacha. My life is back there. My people is back there. My identity is back there. The wife of Lot turns back around. The looking back represents a reluctance to change. And what happens when you have a reluctance? What happens when you are recalcitrant to change? What happens when you are change averse? Vatehi nitzav melach. She becomes a pillar of salt. What's salt? What's salt? Salt is a preservative. Salt is a preservative. Salt keeps things as they are, which is an incredible quality. What doesn't salt allow for? Growth. Salt doesn't allow for any type of vibrant, dynamic growth. Salt preserves things as they are. It will keep it as it is. Can't change, can't become more, can't become different. Whatever state you are in, salt will hold you in that state. The power of salt is it'll hold you in that state for a very long time. What's happening over here? The wife of Lot refuses to change. She refuses to adapt. When you refuse to adapt, you become a pillar of salt. You become preserved where you are, unable to grow, unable to progress, unable to become more. How many of us go through life becoming a pillar of salt? The difference is, she was a stationary pillar of salt. Many of us become mobile pillars of salt. But salt, nevertheless, when there is a reluctance to change, you become that nitziv melach. And this is what the sun is teaching us. Lesson number one, do not be change averse. Do not live life with a self-imposed rigidity. It is true, there are certain things you have to be rigid about, certain things you have to be immovable about, certain things that you cannot compromise on. But many of us make our own lists of things. I can't compromise. Why can't you compromise on that? Why? I can't. You can. You just don't want to. I want to be clear. There are many things that we can't compromise on. Most of those are not things that have to do with us. Most of those have to do with things that Kadosh Baruch Hu told us. I don't have the right to compromise on things that God asks of me or on things that God commands me. That I don't have the ability to compromise on. But in terms of the person I am, in terms of the life I lead, in terms of the relationships I forge, if I want to be successful in those areas of life, I must learn the art of change. I must learn the art of compromise. I cannot go through life in a constant state of rigidity. You know, there is I feel like I've mentioned it before, but it bears repetition here. There is a beautiful insight by the Kutzker. The Kutzker brings down, he says, you know, the Mishnah in Parakeh, the fifth chapter of Pirkei Avos, discusses the 10 miracles which occurred in the Beis HaMikdash. One of those miracles was Omdim Tzefufim Mishtachavim Revachim. When we would stand up, right, the Jews would be shoulder to shoulder in the Beis HaMikdash, but when we would bow down, there was space for everyone. An incredible miracle. So the commentary is trying to understand what was the nature of the miracle. Rashi understands that it was actually a miracle that Dafka occurred on Yom Kippur. Because what happened on Yom Kippur? You bow down for confession, for vidui. So what's going to happen? If you're an earshot of me, I'm going to be a little bit reticent to confess my sins. So therefore, again, in order to enable proper confession, there was a miracle that when we stood up, everybody was packed. But when we bowed down, we wanted to confess our sin. Hashamnu bagavnu, you were out of earshot of me. I was out of earshot of you. You could confess your sins between you and God. I can confess my sins between me and God. But the Kutzker has a beautiful insight. And the Kutzker says to me something a little bit different. It's not just a miracle in the Beis HaMikdash, it's a lesson for life. Omdim tzafufim. There are some people in life who are always omdim. They always stand their ground. They always have to be right. They're always drawing the line in the sand. If you're omdim, if you always stand your ground, tzafufim, there's no room for anyone else. It's stifling for everyone and everything around you. But mishtachavim, if you learn how to yield, you learn how to bow, you learn how to compromise, you learn how to change, rivachim. There's plenty of room for everyone. Says the Shemesh, says the sun to us, yes, there are many things in life that you should be rigid and uncompromising about. But there are just as many, if not more, things that you have to learn the art of change. That you have to learn how to adapt. Just because you did it a certain way for a certain amount of time does not mean that it's correct. And certainly does not mean, even if it was correct, that you should keep doing it mikano lahaba, going forward. Just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to the sun, Sun, your place is here, you're going to shine at this time, in this place, during these hours, but yet, when God had to change it, He did. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu kiviyachol could change, then we must learn the art of change as well. And if we're unwilling to learn it, just know that you'll wind up just like Iris, the wife of Lot. If all you do is look back and say, listen, that's how I did it, that's who I am, that's what I am, okay, just be prepared for a lifetime of being a pillar of salt. Being prepared for a lifetime of being preserved where you are and missing out on a life filled with the potential for dynamic growth. A second lesson. Take a look at number 13. So that first idea is based on the pasuk from Habakkuk that it's quoted in Parak Shira. I want to draw with you for the couple of minutes that we have left. I want to share with you two other lessons that I think can be gleaned from the sun, but not from the pasuk in Habakkuk. Instead, from two other psukim that make reference to the sun. Take a look at number 13. Tan Rabbanon. This is such an important gemara. The gemara Maseches Gittin says, Tan Rabbanon, Hane'elavan ve'inon ulvin. Those who are insulted by others, but do not respond by insulting others. So Hane'elavan, those who are insulted, and do not insult back. Shomin cherpasan ve'inon mashivin. They are shamed, but they do not respond. So reference to those people, ultimately again, who are insulted, who are embarrassed, but choose to be dignified and don't get into the mud by going ahead and responding in kind. Osin me'ahava, they serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a state of love. Usmechen b'yisurin, and they find joy even in the challenges. Aleyan akos of Omer, about them the pasuk says, Va'ohavav kitseis Hashemesh bigvuraso. That those who love HaKadosh Baruch Hu are like the sun when it comes out in its full glory. So let's analyze this for just a moment. So first of all, the pasuk, in general, what Chazal are teaching us is don't get into the mud with people, right? Sometimes, again, people say silly things, people say foolish things, people say hurtful things, and our knee-jerk reaction is to respond, and to respond in kind, and to say, you say that to me? Well, watch what I got for you. How long I've been waiting to say that to you. Finally, you gave me the opportunity. So we all know, nothing good ever comes from that. At the end of the day, says the Gemara, find the strength to hold your tongue and not respond in kind. But the Gemara quotes a pasuk from Shoftim. If you take a look at number 14, The pasuk says, "Al kein yovdu kol aivecha Hashem, v'ohavav kitzeis Hashem shbigvuraso." So may perish all your enemies, O Lord, but they that love Him should be as the sun when He goes forth in His might. So the pasuk says over here that those who love HaKadosh Baruch Hu should be like the sun when it comes out in its strength. What's the context of this pasuk? If you take a look at number 15, so the Rabbag writes, V'hispalo dvora. So remember again, just to give you the context here, this pasuk was said by none other than the Shofetes, than the judge Dvora. When Dvora led the Jewish armies out together with Barak, Va'amra kein yovdu kol oyvei Hashem kimosha avat Sisra. This is in the aftermath of the battle with Sisra, when Barak was leading the army, together with Dvora, defeated Sisra. That ultimately, again, this was said after they defeated Sisra, and Dvora says, those who love HaKadosh Baruch Hu should be as strong as the sun when it comes out in its strength. What's unique about the sun when it comes out in its strength? Sha'oro holech umischazek ad nachon hayom. The interesting part, says the Rabbag, is that if you notice, the sun doesn't come out in its full glory. Rather, how does the sun rise? At first, there's a couple of rays, a few more rays. But even so, you don't really feel the full strength of the sun until when? Until midday. And even at midday, right, it shines strongly for a little bit, and then shortly afterwards, it begins its descent, which ultimately leads to the setting of the sun. So perhaps what the Gemara is teaching us is as follows. We all get knocked down in life. That's what Chazal is teaching us over here. Hane'alavin, shomin charpasan. Everyone gets knocked down in life. It's inevitable. This, by the way, is incredibly important because, you know, now especially there's, I think we mentioned this before, I always find it interesting that there's a trend even amongst little kids and even like in competitive sports, everyone gets a trophy, right? Everyone is a winner. And people think that they're doing a service to their kids by giving everyone a prize. I want to tell you, again, I'm not a parenting guru by any stretch of the imagination. Thank God I have a good wife who knows what she's doing. It's a disservice to children. Because one of the most important lessons in life is there are winners and there are losers. Right? Sometimes you succeed and sometimes you fail. If you think that every single thing you do in life, you are a success and you always get a trophy, right? Oy vavoy. Right? What's going to happen the first time we see it, right? Those kids who grow up coddled like that, who are always winners. Everyone's always a winner. It's not true. Not everyone's always a winner, right? Sometimes you're a winner. Sometimes you're a loser. Sometimes you're a small loser. Sometimes you're a big loser. Sometimes you crash and burn. Sometimes you just hit the ground softly. But that's life. That's life. So ultimately, again, what is the Gemara saying? Hane'alavin ve'einon olvin. There are times we all get insulted and we all get knocked down. Shomin cherpasan. Sometimes we are humiliated and we are shamed. But what happens, says the Gemara, Alein akasiv omer va'alein kitzeis ha-shemesh bigvuraso. What does the sun teach us? You see, the sun gets knocked down also, right? If you were to imagine for just a moment, if you looked at the sun and the moon, and you didn't understand what was happening in the heavens, so you know what it looks like? It looks like a struggle. It looks like a struggle. So what happens? The sun comes up in the morning. It's rising, beautiful. And then what happens? It's getting pushed down. And the more it gets pushed down, the more the moon becomes apparent. And then the sun totally escapes. But then what happens? The next morning, the sun gets up. And when the sun gets up, is the sun get up in its full glory? No. So say Chazal, what a metaphor for life. We all get knocked down. We all get pushed down. We all get stomped upon. We all get trampled upon. This is the nature of life. But the goal of life is, don't stay down. Don't stay down. To say that you're not going to get knocked down, good luck with that. Right? Because it's simply untrue. We all get knocked down and we all get trampled upon. And it's so important to accept this as part of the human condition. Our job is when we get knocked down, when we get insulted, humiliated, shamed, trampled, is don't stay down. But recognize one thing, that when you get knocked down, and even if you find the courage to get back up, you will not, usually, not be able to get back up in full glory. It takes time to rebound after being hurt. It takes time to rebound after being trampled upon. It takes time to rebound. It takes time to shine again after you have been trampled upon by the circumstances of life. But understand, you're in good company. Because who goes through this each and every day? The sun. The sun also gets trampled upon. The moon is a shtickle bully, right? The moon bullies the sun out of the horizon every single night. The sun would love to stay shining there, but the sun gets bullied and the sun ultimately again gets trampled upon and gets pushed down. But amazingly enough, the sun has the courage to get back up the next morning, not in full glory. It takes time to rebound after your life setbacks. But the goal is, don't stay down. Sometimes when we suffer a life setback, our greatest challenge is we wallow in it, right? And we get preoccupied, why me, why me, why me? And those are legitimate questions, all legitimate questions. Why me? It's a very good question. Especially a person says, I look at my life, I try to do all the right things, yet life is not going according to plan. Legitimate question. But accept the fact that at the end of the day, you're most probably not going to get the answer to that. And if you're not going to get the answer to that, you have a choice. Wallow in it, keep asking about it, keep feeling bad for yourself, or figure out the way to get back up. And the sun, says Perek Shira, teaches us this concept every single morning. You get knocked down, find the courage to get back up. But recognize that when you get back up, it takes time to rebound. It takes time to shine again. It takes time ultimately again to come back into your full luminescent glory. But give yourself the time, find the courage to rebound, and in Mirtz Hashem, that luminescent beauty will be restored. One last lesson, and with this we'll stop. There's another amazing Gemara. This Gemara actually references back to the Pasuk in Habakkuk. Take a look at number 16. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, my dechsev, Shemesh Yareach Amad Zvula. So the Gemara Maseches Nedarim is actually quoting our pasuk from Habakkuk, the pasuk in Perek Shira. Now Rabbi Yitzchak is asking a very interesting question. The pasuk says Shemesh Yareach Amad Zvula. Ultimately, again, the sun and the moon stand in the Zvul. Now, just to understand your terms, we translate Zvul as the heavens, but the truth is Zvul really is better translated as celestial sphere. In the heavens, we know that there are Zayin Rakiyim, right? There are seven different levels of the Rakia. So there's Rakia, which is the sky, which is what we see, and then there are multiple layers above that we don't see. The Zavul is considered to be the area that HaKadosh Baruch Hu resides in. So asks Rabbi Yitzchak, why does the Navi Habakkuk make reference to the sun and the moon being in the Zvul? That's not where the sun and moon reside. The sun and the moon reside where? In the Rakia area. It's a good question. So he says, Shemesh Yareach b'Zvul Mabayan. What are the sun and the moon doing in the Zvul? Get ready for this. V'habe Rakia kevi. The sun and the moon belong in the Rakia. Malamed, second line, number 16. Malamed, Sha'alu Shemesh v'Yareach mirakia l'Zvul. V'amru l'fana. Listen to this. It teaches us that the sun and the moon left the Rakia, listen to this, the sun and the moon left the Rakia, right? Out to lunch sign gets turned on the, right? On the office doors, right? Be back soon, right? The sun and the moon go up to the Zvul, they go up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'amar l'fanav, and they said to God, Ribono sh'olam, im ata oseh din leben amram, anu me'irim, v'im lav, ein anu me'irim. So what happens is amazing. So Rabbi Yitzchak understands that this occurred when? During the rebellion of Korach. Moshe Rabbeinu was being publicly shamed by his cousin, by Korach, right? And the sun and the moon come to God and protest, God, you better do something to help out Ben Amram. You better do something to help out Moshe Rabbeinu in the midst of this terrible rebellion. And God, if you don't do something, we're on strike. We will not shine. Sun says, I will not shine by day. Moon says, I will not shine by night unless you help out Moshe Rabbeinu. Incredible. Bo'os Asha, Yara Bohen, Chitzin, V'chanisos. In that moment, the Kadosh Baruch Hu started Kiviyachol shooting arrows and throwing spears at the sun and at the moon. Amar Lahem, God says to the sun and the moon, Achutzba. B'chol yom v'yom, mishtachavim lachem v'atem me'irim. B'chvodilo mechisem. B'chvod basar v'adam mechisem. God says to them, you know, every single day, people worship you. They worship you, sun and moon, instead of worshiping me. And yet for that, you're not outraged. For my covet, God says, when people worship you, my creation, instead of worshiping me, that doesn't outrage you. But for the covet of a mere mortal, that outrages you. God gives them significant mussar. Every single day, there are members of humanity who worship the sun and the moon and treat the sun and the moon as gods. God says, sun and moon, you should be outraged. You should be outraged. They're worshiping you instead of me, but that, I've never heard anything from you. Suddenly, Moshe Rabbeinu is in trouble, and now you're threatening to go on strike. U'bechol yom v'yom. And after this episode, each and every day, Yoren ban chitzin v'chanisos u'me'irin. God has, so from that very day, apparently the sun and the moon were so shamed that they never wanted to shine again. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to force them to come out each and every day, kiviyachol, by shooting arrows and spears at them. Shene emar, lo'or chitzecha yahalechu. So by the way, I'll just show you, if you go back to number 2 for just a moment, now you can see how, according to the Gemara, how that pasuk reads. Shemesh yareach amad zvula. Ultimately, again, the sun and the moon went up to the zvul. Right? They left their stations, they went up to the zvul. Why did they go up to the zvul? Ultimately, again, because they are protesting God's inaction on behalf of Moshe during the rebellion of Korachai. You should sweep in there, do something to destroy Korach and his followers, and stand up for Moshe. God gives them mussar. Now you're coming to me with a taina for Moshe Rabbeinu. Every single day, there are members of mankind who worship you as deities. And yet you were never so careful with my, God's covet, right? You were never outraged that people are worshiping you as gods instead of me. So what happens, according to the Gemara, the sun and moon were so shamed that they never wanted to show their celestial faces again. So what happens? What's the end of the pasuk? Le'or chitzecha ya'alechu, le'noga barak chanisecha. To the light of your arrows they go, to the brightness of the lightning of your spear. The only reason the sun and the moon come out every day is why? Because the Kadosh Baruch Hu prods them to go with his arrows and with his spears. Without those arrows, without those spears, ultimately, again, the sun and the moon would not come out. What's the lesson here? You see, what the sun and the moon were faced with were their own inconsistencies. God pointed out, you're inconsistent. You're inconsistent. You're a shtickle hypocritical. You're inconsistent. You come here again with such righteous indignation that how could it be that God is going to stand by while the tzaddik is publicly humiliated and shamed? And you come here threatening me that you're going to go on strike unless I do something for the tzaddik. Yet, when I, God, am trampled upon day in and day out through people worshiping you guys, you say absolutely nothing. And the sun and their moon, when faced with their inconsistencies, do what? Do what? They retreat. They retreat. They hide in some corner somewhere. And they say, you know what, God? You're right. We're inconsistent. We're hypocritical. And they retreat into their corners, willing to never show their faces again for all eternity. To the point that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to prod them out of their respective corners each and every day in order to go ahead and shine upon the earth. The lesson being, we are all filled with inconsistencies. Each and every one of us possesses inconsistencies. And each and every one of us possesses elements of hypocrisy. That's the nature of people. It's not because we're bad. It's not because we're bad. It's because we're human beings. Because we have frailties, we have shortcomings. I am an inconsistent person. The way I live does not always reflect what I believe. What I say I would like to do is not always reflected in what I do. The system I pledge my allegiance to is not always the system I live by. I am inconsistent, and I am filled with day-to-day hypocrisies. Many times in life, when we are forced to encounter our own inconsistencies and hypocrisies, so often we kind of take the approach of the sun and the moon. Well, if I'm going to be hypocritical and inconsistent, then what? What's the point of trying? But herein lies the difference between the sun and the moon and human beings. The sun, when faced with its inconsistencies and hypocrisies, retreats into a corner, never wanting to be seen again. We embrace our inconsistencies and our hypocrisies. And I say to myself, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I am very imperfect. Absolutely. But just because I am imperfect, and just because I possess inconsistencies and hypocrisies, does not mean that I am capable of good. Does not mean that I am incapable of good. You see, sometimes we think that life is an all or nothing thing. Either you're a tzaddik or you're a rasha. Either you're all good or you're a nothing. And if you can't be all good, then there's no point in doing anything else. There's no point in trying. You know, people do this all the time, where people refuse to undertake life initiatives where they can't be guaranteed of success. Because if I don't know for sure that I could succeed, what's the point of trying? And it sounds very noble, except people who generally take that approach to life, what ends up happening? Right? They accomplish nothing. By the way, this is true in every area of life. This is true in relationships. This is true in dating. This is true in career. This is true in everything. If you're looking for a guarantee of success, you will accomplish absolutely nothing in life. Life is filled with risks. Life is filled with possibilities. Sometimes you fail. Sometimes you succeed. Maybe you fail more often than you succeed. I don't know. Probably differs from person to person. But the idea is we are all filled with these inconsistencies and these hypocrisies. The sun teaches us, don't be like me. When faced with my inconsistencies, the sun said, I retreat. Don't retreat. Don't retreat. Acknowledge your inconsistencies. Acknowledge your shortcomings. Acknowledge the hypocritical aspects of your persona. Try to improve it. But don't go ahead and just simply take your bat, your ball, and your glove and walk off the field because you're imperfect. That's what the sun and the moon did. They were shamed. God pointed out, you guys are hypocritical. You guys are inconsistent. And instead of saying, okay, let's try to be better, they just simply tried to recede and disappear. We don't have that luxury. Acknowledge your hypocrisies. Acknowledge your inconsistencies. Try to rectify them. Try to remedy them. But recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not expect perfection from us. He does not expect us to be always consistent. He expects us to try. And that's what the HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from us, that effort. So if you bring this all together, it turns out that the sun teaches us these three incredible lessons. Lesson number one is learn the art of change. Although you must be immutable and unchangeable in certain areas, just like the sun changed by the Mabul, the sun changed ultimately again by Yoshua, by Givon. So ultimately we must be immutable and rigid in certain areas, but must be open to change and willing to change in so many other areas. Lesson number two, we all get knocked down. When you get knocked down in life, which inevitably happens, just find the courage not to stay down. And recognize that when you rebound, rebounding takes time. Even the sun, when it has been bullied by the moon, been knocked down by the moon, it comes up, but it comes up slowly. A few rays, a few more rays, a few more rays. Then it gets to midday, it's shining brightly, and then, even then, it only holds on to that for a little bit of time until it begins its descent again. When you get knocked down in life, find the courage to go ahead and get back up, but recognize that rebounding will take some time. And lesson number three, don't run away from your inconsistencies. Acknowledge them, recognize them, embrace them, try to improve them, but never live life as an all or nothing endeavor. The sun had inconsistencies and ran away, never wanting to be seen again. We have inconsistencies, must recognize them, but also HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that although I am inconsistent, and although at times I can be hypocritical, that does not make me incapable of achieving great things, incapable of achieving wonderful things, incapable of shining brightly. The mistake of the sun is the lesson for us. Sometimes nature teaches us what to do. Sometimes nature teaches us, follow me. And sometimes nature tells us, you can be better than me. The son said, I ran from my inconsistencies. Don't run from yours. All right, we'll stop here.